Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Hirsch Gardner, legendary drummer of the classic rock band New England and mastermind of the Hirsch Gardner Project. Hirsch, it is a real pleasure to be talking to you.
Mark, yeah, it's great to be here with you, man.
Man, it's just great to know that somebody, after all these decades, can really kick rear ends their music. I was just listening, and we're going to put this in the intro. My Brain Needs a Holiday.
Yeah.
That's your latest solo album. Talk to me about doing solo albums. Like, what pushes an artist to finally do a solo album that you don't think you can do it with your normal lineup of musicians?
Well, you know what? What a great question. This is my second solo album.
Right.
And you know, as a member of the group New England, we throw song ideas around, and you're always, as an artist, you're always coming up with songs. I mean, I try to write as much as I can. If I come up with two or three ideas every week.
Yeah, I've read about you. You're writing songs all the time.
Yeah, pretty much.
Are you one of those people that are writing it on the back of a napkin and stuff like that?
I've been known to do that, but you know, even you know what I do nowadays. I mean, I'll be driving somewhere in my car, and I'll click on the notes page in my phone, and I'll sing a lyric into my phone.
Excellent.
And save it, or you know, even if I hear a song by another artist that I think is killer, you know, there was an Evanescence song that I heard recently. It's like, oh man, that's great. So I just, you know, I just clicked on my notes page in my phone and said, Hirsch, listen to Evanescence, you know, whatever that song was at that time. So yeah, you're constantly writing, you're constantly coming up with ideas, and I'm pretty lucky. I have two recording studios. I have my home studio, and I also have my real studio in Cambridge, Massachusetts. So if wherever I am, and the songwriting process is kind of weird. Yeah, you're writing notes and lyrics down on a piece of paper, but ultimately it's getting into the studio. So for instance, My Brain Needs a Holiday. I came up with I was playing drums, and I came up with this drum idea with it was a really cool shuffle beat, but involved like the tom-toms and the bass drum kicking and all that. So I just went into my studio. I just laid down about 15, 20 minutes of that particular drum beat. And, then I started writing the song to that drum beat, which is kind of a roundabout way of doing things. And then the co-writer on that song is Jimmy Waldo, who's also the keyboard player in my band New England. And so I sent him the track, and he came up with a really cool chordal progression. And then I came up with the lyrical idea and the melodies and things. And that's how that song was born. So
that's like,
you're always writing
an anthem. It's like, is that what you were going for in that? I mean, that is a classic anthem. You don't hear songs like that anymore.
You really don't. And, you know, I'm a huge fan of Queen, Electric Light Orchestra.
Yeah. The big sound.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no shame in overdubbing a whole bunch of parts for me. I love that stuff.
Now, getting back to doing a solo album, and we'll talk about your other projects in a bit, but does it give you a chance to stretch more and to do more different things, sort of take chances?
Absolutely, yeah. I guess I rambled away from that question.
Oh, don't ever worry about rambling, Hirsch. Never worry about rambling. But it does, because I noticed on this, you do a couple of fascinating covers, and there's a lot of different sounds on this album.
Yeah. So you're right. It does give you that opportunity to sort of get away from the standard sound of the band that you might happen to be in as a solo artist. And I mean, there's a song on there called Diamond Moon, which really, really a different orchestration. I've got some Latin percussion going on, and it's not as sort of heavy rock. It's a very tender ballad, and so that affords me the ability to be able to put a tender ballad like that in there, and also put in a song like My Brain Needs a Holiday, and then go over to something like Whiter Shade of Pale, which is
Let's talk about that, because that I'm probably older than you. But I mean, that goes back to my college days. I mean, that was the album, the Procol Harum album, everybody had in their dorm room. And that is a fantastic song. And I have never, the only other cover I've ever heard of was the punk band Dickies covered it. This is a dynamite cover of Watershed Pale. What does that song mean to you?
Well, here's what it means. I was sitting in my home studio on a Sunday afternoon, right in the middle of recording my album. And I love watching some of the YouTube videos of some of the artists that I admire. And I just happened to see a YouTube video of Gary Brooker, who is the original singer and keyboard player in Procol Harum, doing a version of Whiter Shade of Pale in Europe with a full orchestra, a full choir, and guitar, bass, and drums, and he was playing piano. And I tell you, I was so blown away by that one performance. That I was like, oh my God, this is what a great, great performance this is. And here's this guy, he's like 75 years old, and he's singing his butt off.
Yeah.
He's hitting every single note. Ran over to my computer, plugged in my piano, and I just laid down a basic track for that song. And over the course of the next, you know, several months, I kept on working on it. And I said to myself, you're not going to release this thing unless it is really, really good. The performances have to be stellar. The guitar playing, the keyboard playing, everything needs to be top shelf. If you're going to do a cover, it's got to be amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I ended up playing the track for a bunch of friends of mine and other musicians, and they were like, wow, this is really great. So I had the confidence at that point to put it on the album. Gary Brooker, Procol Harum, I mean, it's probably one of the most recognizable songs on the planet.
It's also one of the most recognizable record album covers in the planet. Nice. The black and white drawing on the cover of that is one of the most recognized album covers.
Yeah, yeah. So
now you have another cover on this album too. There's a lot to talk about. You cover Sister Jane, which is a cover of a French band called Typhon.
Yeah. So this is a good story. So New England, we still tour. So we were in Japan a year or so ago. And there was a dear friend of mine, Hiroshi Kaneko, who was the head of A&R for the record company that we were signed to in Japan. And Hiroshi and I were talking one afternoon in Tokyo, and he was like, he knew I was working on my solo album. He said, you know, Hirsch, you should check out this song by this group, Typhon. So I checked out the original version of it, and it's this guy sings way, way, way higher than I do. In the stratosphere. And the original song is just, it's a simple ballad. It's absolutely gorgeous. So I recorded the song pretty much the way Typhon recorded it. And it was terrible. It was just, I mean, my performance just wasn't there. I wasn't feeling it. So I just turned it around and said, okay, I'm going to rock this thing out. So even though it starts a little bit ballady, it does turn into pretty heavy rock.
Yeah, it does.
And that's kind of my wheelhouse because I'm a rocker, you know, and I just like, working on the song. Joe Filoni, who's a dear friend of mine and also the guitarist in the Hirsch Gardner Project, Joe came up with some stellar, stellar guitar parts in that song. And it just worked. So I have no aversion to putting somebody else's, material on a record of mine. As a matter of fact, for me, it's kind of like paying tribute to the great artists that are out there. And Sister Jane ended up being one of my favorite songs on the album. It really is great.
Now, talk to me about the Hirsch Gardner Project. Please tell me that you're going to play My Brain Needs a Holiday in that when you're out with the Hirsch Gardner Project.
So we will be playing that song.
Okay.
And we're learning more songs every time we rehearse. You know, about 2 or 3 years ago, I decided that I want to get out front and be a lead singer and play a little bit of guitar. Because I play acoustic guitar, but just, changa, 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 changa. I don't do any leads or anything like that.
Okay, stop right there, Hirsch. Was this a big deal for you to be the front person doing the vocals?
Oh, my God. I'm still petrified when I go to do it. Okay. I'm gigging. The Hirsch Gardner Project is playing tomorrow night, which is Saturday night. It's a benefit concert for veterans, and I'm shaking right now thinking that I have to go on stage and be the lead singer tomorrow night. So, yeah, it is a scary thing to step out from behind the drums and play acoustic guitar, and I play piano for a couple of songs.
Wow.
So But it's just, you know, it's something that's been nagging at me for years and years and years. And so we put the duo together where Joe and I would go out. We would do a couple of songs that were on both my solo albums. We did a couple of New England songs. And then everybody kept on saying, "Oh, Hirsch, you guys sound great as a duo, but boy, you should really have a band." So I said, "Oh, okay." So begrudgingly, I decided to, you know, put a band together, and I've got some of the most amazing people playing with me now, who, quite frankly, just make me sound really good. And then, it's interesting being, the leader of a band. You've got that responsibility of, you know, having to tell somebody, I like what you're doing, but I don't love it. Well, let's try this. It's kind of like,
oh wow.
You've got to have a handle on where you want to go and what you want to project as an image and sound. But I'm loving it. It's a cool thing. It's a really cool thing to have a band.
You've had experience producing other people. Early on, you produced Willie Niles. And so you know about that. You know about how to bring out the best in everybody.
It's a gift. It really is. I'm lucky in my life. I've gotten to work with people like Paul Stanley, who's a lead singer from Kiss.
He produced the
first New England album. And I've worked with Mike Stone, who produced Queen.
And Todd Rundgren.
Last but not least. And it's funny. During all of those sessions, there's her. She's not playing drums. He's not singing. But he's standing there over the console, looking over the producer's shoulder. And, "Hey, what are you doing? What are you doing? Hirsch, leave me alone. I'm working here." But you try to learn as much as you can and steal as many tricks as you can from those guys. And then put it to use. But it's also, a people game. You've got to be able to, talk to people. You need to be able to sell that idea that you have that they may not see, because they're, maybe somebody's singing a little bit out of tune. Well, you got to politely be able to tell somebody, "Hey, man, that's a little pitchy. It's like, let's try that again." Or, "I'm not crazy about that melody. It doesn't really meld into the chorus well. Hey, why don't you try this?" And of course, being a singer, I have the advantage of being able to sing a part. And suggest a melody to somebody that they may love. They also may hate it, and at which point I think, "Okay, cool, it's your song. Let's try something different." So it's a people game, and it's great to be able to mold that song into something that is going to be a huge hit. You hope.
How have audiences changed? Because New England started in 1979. And you've really been through the business at all ends of it. Mm-hmm. What's it like still playing out?
It's absolutely amazing. The Japanese tour we did was just incredible. It was the first time we'd ever played in Japan, and our music has been out in Japan since 1979. The audience was just incredibly receptive. They love rock and rollers over there. I couldn't even walk down the street without being asked for my autograph.
Wow.
Which is very humbling. It's a great experience. I got a great story. We were doing a meet and greet at the Tokyo show, and there were about 250 people in line at this show, just waiting for autographs and signatures and signing merchandise and stuff like that. So this one kid comes up to me, and he must have been, well, he wasn't a kid. He was probably about 45 years old. And he handed me a note that was written. It was gorgeous. It was in an envelope, and the envelope had the name New England on it, and it had Japanese writing. It was all in like calligraphy.
Mm.
It was, and Japanese writing is just,
it's beautiful.
Anyway.
It is. Yeah.
So I thanked him very much. And he explained to me in his broken English that he'd been a fan for, over 40 years and loved me and he loved my band. And so I sat down with our interpreter after the meet and greet was over, and she read me this letter. And I was in tears. It was just amazing. This guy explained in the letter that many, many years ago, he had seen me on TV with the band, and And he just fell in love with the group, and he loved my drumming and loved my singing and all this. It was very, very flattering. And he said, you know, throughout the years, he's followed me and my band and the Hirsch Gardner Project and the solo stuff that I've been doing. And, you know, at the end of the note, and it was, this is what brought a tear to my eye. He said, you know, and if I were to pass today and go to the other world, that he'd now met his heroes in life and the musicians that he'd always dreamt of meeting in person, and he finally gets to see the band live. I mean, how cool is that, man?
It's amazing. It's also an awesome responsibility when you realize you've had that kind of effect on people's lives.
Nobody's ever really put it that way, but you're absolutely right. And, you know, if I can say one thing, I mean, I've met a lot of...
You're at the stage in your career now that there are bands who've started because of your records.
You know what? I mean, I could tell you a couple other stories where famous rock and roll stars that I, would bow down to have come up to me and said that to me. But, it's the responsibility part of it is very important. You will meet rock and rollers that don't appreciate that and are sometimes rude and just, a little, above and beyond being able to speak to somebody. I'm honored when somebody comes and talks to me about my band, asks for my autograph and stuff like that. It's just terrific. But, another little story that absolutely blew me away was Dimebag Darrell and Pantera were playing in Fitchburg many years ago. And one of my good friends was the sound man in the band, and he invited me to the show. So I went, and my young daughter was, I think Michaela was 12 years old then or something. So we went to the show in Fitchburg, and after the show, I went back to the dressing room, and Aaron, the sound guy, says, "Hey, would you like to meet the guys in the band?" So I said, "Of course, yeah." So he went and introduced me to Vinnie Paul, the drummer, who is an amazing, amazing drummer. Just so much respect for him. He was very pleasant. And then he said, "Well, let's go over and talk to Dimebag." I said, "Oh, that's cool." So we went over and he introduced me to Dimebag Darrell, and he's going, "Hirsch Gardner, New England, you guys." And he just like flipped out. "This is Dimebag Darrell, man." It's like, so he told me the story, and this was actually confirmed on an interview that I read about a year and a half ago that Dimebag gave when he was alive. One of the first shows that he ever went to was Journey, AC/DC, and New England at the Summit in Dallas, Texas. And Dimebag was in the front row. And he told me that night when I met him, he says, "Man, you guys were such a huge inspiration for me. I basically started music and started playing guitar after I saw you guys and Journey and AC/DC." And I was like floored. And of course, my daughter's standing there at 12 years old, and she's like, "What? Daddy, you're a real rock star."
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is Hirsch Gardner, legendary drummer of the classic rock band New England and mastermind of the Hirsch Gardner Project and all so much more. Now, I want to talk about New England. Okay.
Okay, cool.
First album, self-titled. Okay. Talk to me about your first experience in the studio. What was it like to go into a real studio and, lay down some tunes? What was the experience like for you personally?
Well, it was amazing. It was scary. Here I'm sitting out there on my drum set. This was in Los Angeles, where we cut the basic tracks. And behind the glass, I've got Paul Stanley, Kiss, and Mike Stone, who just finished producing the Bohemian Rhapsody album. It's like, oh my God. Oh, so, I got some big shoes to fill here. So, I kicked ass, pardon me. It kicked some butt and, did the best I could. And the rest of the band, played their parts. And the first album is just, I still listen to it today, and I still think that album holds up, mm-hmm. even in today's market.
Yeah.
Those guys, Paul Stanley and Mike Stone, did an amazing job. But it was very scary. It was humbling, to be able to, get in there and produce, the kind of music that New England had been playing for years before we got signed. What's another tidbit?
You know, well, you know, the other thing I want you to talk about is the change up in technology and recording technology. 1979 recording technology is so different from contemporary technology. Today, it seems like it's a breeze. Like you can.
Well, you obviously operate a digital, you know, console with the radio station, so you know how much more you can do now.
Yeah, I've been at the radio station since 71. So,
yeah, so
I know reel to reel. Oh, my God.
You know, it's funny. You ask a kid today what a splicing block is, and what's that razor blade for? No, it's not for that. It's for splicing tape. And, why would you do that?
Oh, those were the days when you had to edit that way. It's amazing. Now, we're going to run out of time, Hirsch, because there's so much to talk about. New England toured with some huge bands. Cheap Trick, Kansas, Styx, Foghat, yeah. Blue Oyster Cult, Molly Hatchet, the list goes on. Of all those bands that you toured with, what was the best fit and what was, for you, looking back on it, like the most dynamic combination for you and New England?
Well, I think that the Kiss tour that we did was just amazing. Here you're playing with the biggest band in the world, you know, and you're playing, you know, we played Madison Square Garden for two nights in a row. You know, we played Pontiac Stadium. We played in Los Angeles. We played every major city in the country. And it's funny, we get on stage at Madison Square Garden, and that's the hometown crowd for Kiss.
Oops.
And the audience sees this band getting on stage, and they started booing our band before we played our first note.
Oh, man.
So I was pretty much the first one on stage, and the other guys are plugging in their gear, and I'm like, I can't let them boo us off the stage. So I just broke into a drum solo, and you know, all of a sudden the lights were off, and here's this guy going mad on the drums, and then I finished the drum solo, and the audience actually, you know, got up and applauded and started screaming, and it was very, very positive. So it's like, that was a tough crowd. Every place that we played, people were there to see Kiss. They were diehard Kiss fans.
Oh, man.
Years and years later, like today, I read some of the comments of people that were at those shows, and they say, well, New England was amazing. What a great band they were. So, you know, it's a tough job to be an opening act, but we did good.
Now, I think it was the third album, Walkin' Wild. That's the Todd Rundgren produced album. You do vocals on Holdin' Out on Me, didn't you?
Yeah.
Was that your first big vocal track?
No, I sang lead on the second song, and I sang lead in Nothing to Fear on the first album.
Okay.
But it was like the first, I think it was one of the first songs that I actually sang the whole way through. And it's funny, that scream that I do right at the beginning of Holdin' Out on Me, Todd was like saying, Hirsch, you got to kick off this song with something really, really cool. I just remember him saying that. So I was like, well, what are you thinking, Todd? He said, why don't you just scream like, you know, Ted Nugent or Robert Plant. Give me something to open up this song. And that's where that scream came from. Todd was a mastermind in the studio. He was so great to work with.
Now, a question that I ask every single artist, whether it's a visual or a recording artist, I always want to know like how this choice in your life happened. I mean, when did you know that you were going to be a rock musician? At what point in your life? Were you one of those kids who was always drumming? Or like at what point in your life did you actually go, this is it. This is the choice I'm going to make. I'm not going to become a certified public accountant. I'm going to become a drummer in a major band.
Well, obviously the Beatles and the Stones and all that, and Ed Sullivan had a big influence.
Oh.
I was actually playing drums before that. My aunt was a huge swing era fan. Benny Goodman, Artie Shaw, Gene Krupa, Buddy Rich. So I was listening to those jazz albums before I got into rock and roll.
Huh.
And I just, you know, I loved it so much. I had such a passionate feeling when I played drums. And when I was just learning how to lick it to a boom, chick, boom, boom, chick, it was just like.
So when was your first drum set? When did you get your first drum set?
Well, my sister loaned me $250 and I went and bought a Ludwig, a 1965 or 64 Ludwig bass drum.
Oh, nice.
And a snare drum and bought a Boosie and Hawks tom-tom that didn't have any legs. So, yeah. And I still have the snare drum today.
But what about when that choice came? Because a lot of people play the drums as a kid. a lot of people love rock and roll, but then to make that choice in your life, like, yeah, this is what I'm going to do. First of all, it's incredibly chancy to go, I'm going to do rock, and this is going to be my career choice. When did that happen?
Well, you know what? I honestly, I was playing, you know, all through high school. But, you know, when I decided to come to Boston and go to Berklee College of Music, I guess that was that moment when it's like, okay, this is what you're going to do.
Yep, that's it. That's what I'm looking for.
And, you know, when I came to Berklee, I was scared stiff. The cab dropped me off on the corner of Boylston Street and Hemingway, and there I was. It's like, oh, my God, you know, what am I doing? You know, and, you know, I did all 4 years at Berklee, but I really didn't do well in school because I was more interested in getting out there and playing.
Yep.
And so I put bands together at Berklee, and we would go out and play and, you know, have fun. And so that was kind of, I guess that's the answer to your question. Is those were the formative years of like, okay, this is what you're going to do.
Can you remember the name of any of your high school bands?
Oh, yeah. I was in a band called Just Us in Toronto. And then I was in a band called the Blues Faction, which played in Yorkville Village in Toronto. And some of my peers at that time were Joni Mitchell, Robbie Robertson, and all the guys in the band.
What?
Rick James would drive up from Buffalo and put a band together in Toronto called the Minor Birds.
Oh, man.
Neil Young was, a crony of mine back then. And I still stay in touch with some of the guys in the band called Luke and the Apostles. If anyone were to Google Luke and the Apostles, you'd see that they were one of the most incredible Toronto blues bands. And here's another name, David Clayton Thomas from Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
In Toronto.
Wow. And people who aren't of a certain age aren't going to understand how big these people were.
Well, Joni Mitchell is Joni Mitchell.
Right. And Neil Young is Neil Young.
Right. And that's the
man,
that's where it all started.
Jesus. We're completely out of time, Hirsch. We could talk for hours about your career. I love it.
Anytime, my friend.
Hey, well, we'll have you back. We'll have you back in a couple of months.
Sounds good.
My guest tonight is Hirsch Gardner, legendary drummer of the classic rock band New England and mastermind of the Hirsch Gardner Project, which you got to catch. Hirsch, it's been a real pleasure, a real deep pleasure.
Mark, thank you. You're an excellent interviewer. Some fantastic questions. I really appreciate it.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night. Just don't